read the first chapter. It was like a little semester away.
Oh, is that like two different things?
Yes.
Okay, can you send us rock? So Dennis, is that on?
Yes, it's on the bar.
Don't say anything bad about Dennis.
I wasn't gonna, if someone told me to do a third one, extra one, oh, by the way.
Is it all?
I know, I came earlier, wanna make sure I'm here.
Can't go for long.
I don't know if it's worth trying to put in a third one.
And I just sent him a message, he said, sorry mom, it's Friday.
Yeah, well, if I don't go, I still got A minus.
I was good, we were gonna dinner last night, he said he'd go with me to the talking paper, right?
You could A minus.
No. And then we canceled it, and then I could be out there anyway, so. Hey Barbara, hey, I'm glad you're here.
Good.
Chuck.
Hey, how are you? I got that book.
Hey.
Yeah. They had one copy. Yeah. That was great.
I was thinking that too. Like, you see
him in the since you guys kind of have a relationship,
I have this.
All right, you guys, I think we're going to get started soon. Did you guys figure it out?
Not quite.
Here, I have another little thing.
Must turn on.
Here, I'm sorry.
Did you already get one here?
Is your thing on?
Yeah, I think it's pointing.
That's okay.
Sorry,
and then all you need to do is your volume up on
No, I just took it off because it wasn't really.
Okay.
Is there a boombox in here?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you're doing it. I'll see
if it's yeah. Irene, I gotta go get a boombox quick.
Okay. Okay.
Will you watch all this stuff?
Yeah, really?
Sure.
No, I'm looking to cancel this.
Music events and so forth. It's a lot of fun. So if you're interested, you can see me after the reading. Irene Sipos is going to give the intro for ML today. So let me just turn on the video camera.
Should I stay in this area here?
Irene, why don't you go to ML?
It's like an arena.
Okay.
It's arena rock.
All right, we're rolling.
Irene is in the arena.
Hi, Irene.
It's Doug.
Doug's in the house.
Okay.
Chuck's in the house. I think James Joyce is in the house. So. We're set.
We were delighted to meet ML when our learning community, the American Sojourn Learning Community, went to Detroit this October. And Heather Mazzanato in our community put out word in Detroit, is there anybody out there who would meet with us and talk to us? We're coming to Detroit. And so we met ML, who has a Motown learning community, and connected with us and took us on a tour. You got on our bus and showed us everything that's interesting and historical and pertaining to what we're studying in our learning community. And then we were lucky enough to go to a performance.
Oh, and that's right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, ML Lieber is...
I know it's true. I saw a picture of it.
That's right. So, it's a great connection. And then ML came last night for the Learning Community Showcase, which was just great.
Are these learning community people in general?
No. Okay. Not in this
Forget about
particular
that,
audience. Anybody who
Roll back
that?
The tape and edit that out.
So, a little background. ML Liebler is an internationally known, widely published Detroit poet, university professor, literary arts activist, and arts organizer. And he is the author of 13 books, including the award-winning Wide Awake and Someone Else's Dream, Wayne State University Press, 2008, featuring poems written in and about Russia, Israel, Germany, Alaska, and Detroit. Wide Awake received both the Patterson Poetry Prize for Literary Excellence and the American Indie Book Award for 2009. He has just been awarded, along with Maxine Hong Kingston and Juno Diaz, the prestigious 2010 Barnes & Noble Poets and Writers 2010 Writers Award. Past recipients were Russell Banks, A.M. Holmes, Stanley Kunitz, Bob Holman, Edward Albee, Judy Blume, Mary Higgins Clark, Stephen King, Barbara Kingsolver, Wally Lamb, Walter Mosley, Susan Sontag, Amy Tan, and others.
Bunch of nobodies, I'm telling you.
This event is sponsored by the American Sojourn Learning Community and the University College Dean's Office. Welcome to
Thank
the
you.
Campus.
Thanks, folks. Well, one thing I'll say sometimes I do poems with music, and sometimes I do poems I'm not going to do it, but I could stand behind something like that and read a poem too, but that's kind of boring. But I'll do a little of everything, but the other thing is one thing I don't do, and that is Grateful Dead length concerts. I usually do 5 or 6 pieces, and that I find in poetry, although most poets don't know that, that less is more. And only certain poets, we were just talking about this in Detroit the other night, only certain poets are allowed to go for an hour or 45 minutes, and those are people like Stanley Kunitz at the age of 100, he's earned it, and he probably has some interesting things to say. Good friend of mine, he's not 100, but he's getting up there. Phil Levine from Detroit, he can read for, we'll give him 45 minutes, he's long enough, but I'm not going to do that. So, I've got a wide variety of different listeners. I really like to, especially the music stuff, do it for people who don't necessarily always attend poetry readings or who have never attended a poetry reading. So I was going to start by reading a poem, but I think I'm going to actually start with a music piece. I'll read a poem. I'll do a couple of pieces with music, and if you want to ask questions. Of course, I've already kind of put everybody's name on one of these books here, so they're sold. No, they're not. But I sell stuff cheap, too, or you can just steal it. It doesn't really matter to me. It's more important for people to get it. Do you know that as a poet, too? So I'm going to do two poems together with the same music. And actually, I'm going to use, as a backdrop to this, although I've recorded it with a number of different types of music before, for everything from funky to Green Onion-esque and stuff like that. But I'm gonna use this CD of that you may be familiar with Quincy Jones and Bill Cosby. But this is the remix of it, which always, of course, ruins things, but works perfect for my purposes here. So I'm gonna do this poem called, the poem is called In a Window. It's about a Detroit auto worker who's laid off. I mean, this is a common thing in Detroit, and I'm probably here too. And it uses him as sort of part of the metaphor. Then I'll segue into an old poem written in the early 60s around Wayne State University by one of Detroit's well-known, I don't know what the word is for him, bon vivant, poet, manager, artist, John Sinclair. I don't know if you guys are familiar with him. He was the manager of the MC5. You know, most of your books are like my books, so, you know, we're on the same thing. And I was going to tell Alan, if he was here, that I did go to Talking Leaves. He's right, it is a great bookstore. And the one way I know that's true, and I don't know if you're hip to this or not, but they have this journal or magazine that comes out once in a while, like twice a year, called Ugly Things. I don't know if you've ever seen it. But it's all music from, like, obscure music from the 60s, which I really like. And it started as a Pretty Things fanzine years ago. See? Now you all rush out and buy Ugly Things. It's like a book is what it is, but it comes out twice a year. So they have that, and you don't see that everywhere at all. You might not even see that in New York City, so that was pretty rare find. But I'll segue into John Sinclair's poem, which is just written in the Cass Corridor, which is our neighborhood where they visited, and that surrounds Wayne State. Wayne State is a little area that is set in the middle of the inner city, and sort of like City College, maybe. Some people do compare it to a City College type of thing, except for the Cass Corridor is probably one of the most dangerous neighborhoods in America. It's always been known as that. And that's, of course, where Wayne is right on the edge of that, and its influence, they call him the Cass Corridor artist and so forth. So Sinclair wrote this little poem that in 64, and he was a manager of the MC5. You guys have heard of MC5? How about the Joyce Scout? The White Panther Party, which was part of the youth movement against the war, except for they were, nowadays when you say the White Panthers, I guess it kind of sounds like a racist organization, like the Ku Klux Klan, the White Panthers, but they were the young white people who supported the Black Panthers, and in fact that was the first point of their 10-point, is we support all the points of the Black Panther Party. And he went to prison for 10 years. He was sentenced for 2 joints of marijuana. Some of you have that in your car right now. He went to prison for 10 years. He served about 3, and John Lennon and Yoko Ono and Stevie Wonder and a bunch of people put on a concert to raise money for his defense, and which was always going on in Detroit for those years. And that was on a Friday night in Ann Arbor, and in 1971, and Monday he was released from prison. And you guys know who John Lennon is, I hope. And that was really the beginning of the end for John Lennon, because they decided that night to take that tour, and they had speakers, which you could never get young people to sit still for, but in between all the musical acts, Bob Seger, Stevie Wonder, Phil Oakes, it was jazz, everything, you know, Bobby Seals from the Black Panther Party spoke, Jerry Rubin spoke, Allen Ginsberg read poetry, my close friend Ed Sanders hosted it. It was just an amazing evening. And then he gets out of prison on Monday after he'd been in already for 3 years in an intense prison, not one of these things where the guys who robbed all those people in New York City go, but like a real prison, you know, where, you know, you don't grab the soap off the ground type of prison, for 2 joints. And they all decided, Lennon included, like, let's put this together and take it around the country, and we'll end at the San Diego Convention, where Richard Nixon would be nominated, and we'll defeat Nixon. Well, immediately, the Nixon administration put the kibosh on John Lennon and tried to get him thrown out of the country. So if you get a chance to see the movie The U.S. versus John Lennon, nice documentary, talks all about that, and John Sinclair is a big part of that story. So that's a long-winded thing to tell you about this author of the second poem, but nonetheless. Okay. So this is going to be In a Window into the Screamers. One hot summer night, sat in the window, sat in the window, with the fan blowing ice on my back, and I listened to the neighbors, scream bloody murder at his four children, of which two were adopted. So I folded my arms over my face, folded my arms over my face like an eclipse. As the heat from the night and from his words burned the earth down, burned the earth down, burned the earth down to the thick layers of dead ghosts that are forever buried in the steam of the mud. Steam of the mud. As the moon passed from one side of morning, his words became tears, and his children cracked mirrors. And with each breath, he drew into the steam underside of his deferred sleep. And he whispered to himself, for sometime post 6 a.m. that he had lost his will. He thought the future asked him to exist just as long as he could exit by sunrise. Well, now here's how it appears. He's lost himself over ever. He seems to realize he'll go on and 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 on as just another man. In a window, a Detroit window. In a window, one hot summer night. John Sinclair's poem was called The Screamer. And he wrote, 1964. Staggered down overgrown sidewalk of memory, give a hand and giggling. Earth angel. Earth angel. Earth angel, how I long for you. And where you been all these years, Johnny Ace with a hole in his head? Where you going, Ivor Jones? For all those stupid white jive imitation cat booting, stealing their songs. Shaboo! Shaboo! Chuck Berry, Jimmy Reed, Oh, Gidley, say this right here. He said, walk more than 7 miles of barbed wire. Use a cobra snake for a necktie. Got a brand new house by the roadside. Hey, that old rat says hi. Who do you love? 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 Weird lullabies. Long and long and lonely nights for you, precious love. I would have drank gasoline, but I wanted. All I really needed was just a little bit of clear water. Because where I come from, the serious old phase of the imagination, old gangs, beer drinkers, bunch of theisters. Where did they go? Where did they go? Where did they go? Where did they go? Walked 47 miles of barbed wire. Used a cobra snake for a necktie. Got a brand new house by the roadside. Made out of weather, say hi. Who do you love? Who do you love? Who do you love? He sat in a window, a Detroit window, up in a window, one hot summer night. He sat in a window, a Detroit window, up there in a window, one hot summer night. Thank you.
Kind of how we use it a little bit.
So I'm going to read a poem from this new book. I don't have copies of this. You can probably get it cheaper on Amazon for like a buck or a penny or something like that. So it's so expensive. I don't know if I'd buy it, but $15-16. But I wrote this poem. I do stuff all over the world, and you know, here's a tip for people who teach and academics and students. If people ask you to come somewhere overseas and they ask you to do something, just tell them you can do it, even if it's something you can't. Like if they asked me to do an economics lecture, I wouldn't. So, and also overseas, those who have been know that many things are lost in translation, like that Bill Murray movie. Because once I went and we walked into a schoolroom in Siberia to do what you just saw. But when we walked in, everybody was slumped in their seats, just like here. You know, and there was about 60 kids, and I thought, what the hell's going on here? Well, anyway, we did our thing, and we ended up singing yesterday. I had a musician with me. We did yesterday with the whole class. But afterwards, I said, you know, I got to ask you guys. When we walked in, you looked like you were bored, stiff, and I mean, what did the teachers tell you was going to happen? And they said, oh, they told us two Americans were coming to sing American folk fairy tales. Now, you know, they're teenagers, right? They thought we were going to come in and do a musical version of Little Red Riding Hood or something. And they said, but you guys were cool. Well, they didn't speak English, but through translators, that's what I think they said. They might have said, you guys, it's just suckers. But anyway, at the time, they asked me to come over to Germany. I've been there quite a bit in Munich and the American House, and they wanted me to lecture. And they said, can you give a lecture? Because I do teach labor studies, but labor through the arts. So they asked me, could you give a lecture on Detroit and Chicago and labor during the Depression? And I said, sure. I mean, I don't know anything about that. So I thought about it, and I wrote this poem on the airplane. And I thought of Phil Levine's famous award-winning book called What Work Is, and that came to my mind. So the poem is called Making It Right. It's kind of, a story of Detroit and poetry and work and not work. Lines composed after, it's called Making It Right, lines composed after being asked to lecture on labor in Detroit and Chicago during the Depression at the American House in Munich, Germany. And I use Phil Levine as an epigraph. You know what work is. If you're old enough to read this, you know what work is. Although you may not do it, forget you. I wrote this on the airplane. I bring no poetry today from the oil and grease soul of my Detroit. This history I am is only and nothing more than the son of an auto worker. Just another Detroit man beaten down by the tortured years of depression, world wars, and the awful angst of unemployment. This is my story without balance weighing heavier on the side of heartache and less on the side of the sacred and glorious. This is my story of what no work is and what it can do to the working class in the darkness of their desperation. I wish now I did have some kind of little poem to say aloud right here to make you all understand what is inside the blackened heart and under the whittled bones of the people who have been left behind in the ashes of the plant. I guess I could read you a poem about how labor takes a boy and makes him a worker before he's allowed to become a man. How the factory humiliates and intimidates all people with endless assembly and useless work. How the line takes 1 ounce of every soul lived for every minute it is sped up to completion. How Henry Ford's great innovation doomed generations to continuous monotony in the name of making a living. About people who learn that their reality is having their names spelled out in factory smoke long before they were born, a birthright for workers to endure through the long loneliness of industry and unemployment lines where we wait and wait for our bread and roses to fall from the sky like beads of perspiration upon our graves. We dream that maybe prosperity is really just around the corner. So we get up every morning with hope and we return each night to the broken houses of our lives, seldom realizing that it is our labor that keeps this whole world together. I guess in the end we do not know what work is, but still we continue to do it over and over and over, making it right. So, that's my point. After that presentation last night, I feel like I should say, are there any questions? Everybody wanted to answer questions. I want to be like everybody.
Let you go.
What's that?
Let you go.
the lecture. Oh, they loved it. You know what it was at the American House? What those places were, just quickly, they were set up after World War II to kind of have an American presence, not so much for security, but as a healing process during the post-war years. And many of them stayed there, and some are still there, but many of them have now been turned into something else, either American Institutes, as in Stuttgart, or whatever. But they still have one in Berlin, they still have one in Munich, and a few places. I think Heidelberg has one. But mostly it's like older German Americans or with some affiliation, and they come mostly, you know, like a lot of countries, they just come to hear English spoken, you know, really. A lot of people around the world, because I do work in all these countries where they don't really necessarily understand English, but, and I always thought it was kind of, what am I doing here? This, and they said, no, they just want to hear someone speak it, which is interesting to me, so. As you can tell, I don't have a problem talking, so I just go over and talk. I'm going to do a piece. You guys saw me do a version of this in Detroit that is coming out on a new recording with the High Strung, and who I played with there. But this is the original version, which actually didn't appear for some reason on any CD. And it's a Blood Moon piece. Called Blood and the Moon. It's really two poems again. I don't know what this two poem thing is, but maybe somebody can write about it. He selects two poems because of his insecurity of mankind. I don't know. But the first poem is called The Undertow, which is in this book here, which does have a CD in the back that has a lot of well-known musicians. That's what I meant to tell you, some of them. It's all your Dylan books. I'm really good friends with Al Cooper, for example. He's on the CD. So this is, the first poem is called The Undertow, and this is the book from before the news. From the undertow, swirling blood of envy flow, draining my body pale and dry, pale and dry upon the bone. Bone earth of death, bone earth of death. And I fascinated myself within the skin of myself, within the skin of my own desires. I stood alone, believing no one, understanding my future less and less, just a shadow against the moon, just a shadow against the moon's face, just a shadow against the moon, moon's face, moon's face, moon's face, moon's face. Underbrush pump blue in my heart. The sassy talking clovers whispered at times. Climbs cool in the mud, climbs naked in my blood. An unknown rhythm that speaks of leaves that shake the eyelids in the dancing night. All night long I can hear it, I can see it, I can feel it in the moon tonight. All night long I hear it pounding, bump, bump, and pow. All night long I hear it pounding, bump, bump, and pow. All night long I can hear it, see it, feel it, almost touch it. Yeah, there's blood in that moon tonight. That's the same moon, that's a
above us in Buffalo. That's not blizzardy. You can follow it over to Detroit, then Chicago. A little bit further west, pick up the Mississippi. Sail it down into St. Louis. Take it into Memphis. A little bit further down to New Orleans. New Orleans, yeah. That's Mississippi mud, Mississippi blood, Mississippi mud under that same moon that's above us in Buffalo tonight. All night long I hear it pounding, pump, pump, and pound. All night long I hear it pounding, pump, pump, and pound. All night long I can hear it, see it, feel it, taste it, and just about touch it. All Halloween orange and glowing. Blood in the moon tonight. Blood in the moon tonight, yeah. Blood in the moon tonight. Tonight's a night. Tonight's a night. Thank you. Okay. Here's a poem. This is a true story. It actually has been set to music, but it was written. And a question sometimes a lot of people ask is, you know, do you write the poems and the music and together and that? No, all the poems that I do, I've written and published before. So I either create the music for it, or someone will bring a unique piece of music of the musicians I work with and so forth, and then I find the right poem to go with it. So that's an example of that too. In this case, a musician brought me that track, and I heard that, and we kind of met up in London and performed it, and it seemed to work, and then it became part of the repertoire. But this is a true poem that is on the newest CD there, the Detroit Legacy Sessions, which I think, isn't it the one I gave everybody a copy of? Did I, with the tire on the front? Okay. Not you guys, but those learning community. Rock and roll. True story. Kind of explains me, I guess. Might explain Chuck, too. I thought about the many nights of rock and roll I spent in my youth. Hardcore. My grandma taught me how to rock. She hummed Elvis while she hemmed my pants. She liked Elvis. She liked him so much that she bought me a black leather jacket with zippers and a motorcycle hat like Marlon Brando's. That really pissed Mrs. Taylor off. She kicked me out of first grade. She said I'd be a bad influence on all the other kids. Yeah, I don't like those snotty-nosed kids anyway. They couldn't rock like Grandma. True story, absolutely true. Grandma was really mad. I was raised by my grandparents. My grandmother was really mad when the school called and said, this is inappropriate dress. You must come and take this child home and redress him or put a right. This is in the 50s, so late 50s. In fact, when I was in high school, I don't know about some of you folks, but we couldn't wear blue jeans in high school. We couldn't have a beer. This is why I have had one ever since, as soon as I graduated. But it wasn't white. Just so you know. And I don't dye it. Sometimes people, they ask you interesting questions overseas. China, this is a mustache. I like your mustache. Want to touch it? It's my mustache. Okay. I'll just do, let's see. I think I'll do one more. And this is, I think it's on here. Maybe two. And this is a track. I recorded an album, kind of an acoustic record of poetry and music with Country Joe McDonald. And it was pretty good. It sold out pretty quickly, and you can find it around a little bit now. But this is a track. I was very influenced by the war in Vietnam. I guess I shouldn't have my back to the camera like Miles Davis. I was very influenced by the Vietnam War and growing up during that time period, and by the situation that's kind of recounted in this poem. So It's called Decoration Day. Hopefully I got the right track here. Yeah. So this is Country Joe McDonald playing from our album that was called, I think it was called Crossing Borders on Rag Baby Records. A couple of days after the news reached the States, his mother's heart broke, never to mend itself. With his last breaths, he took his family and friends hostage into the darkness of the world's sin. And there's no turning back the clocks. They cannot be adjusted to read the present time when the future has died alone, somewhere in another place. And the newspapers will write about it, the TV will talk about it, but no one will ever tell this story the way it really happened, the way it was supposed to have happened, in a small town, alone, in a life unknown. And this business of murder bruises each rising sun above every American town, towns that were never more than small dots on small maps routing death to innocent lives that will be forever lost, forever lost, forever lost in the rapid fire of the jungle night. And because everyone can't believe it doesn't mean it didn't happen. Because everyone didn't see it doesn't make it untrue. Because everyone hurts doesn't make it stop. Because after 20 some years they'll have forgotten all your names doesn't mean you never existed. Because it is. It is. And you can't reappear for the benefit of the few who doubted all along. Injustice is the law here. Dear boy, here where you grew up, where you dreamed, not where you died, not where they took you, laid you out neatly uniformed, and placed you in the funeral home of the Far East. The whole thing planned. The whole thing planned right down. The smallest detail, except for your mother's broken heart. That's Country Joe. And that dawned on me after I started that. I should have set it up. That was one of the first Michigan boys killed in Vietnam. It was very early December of 65, and he was our neighbor. And from that young age, I mean, nobody had ever heard of Vietnam. Some people have still not heard of it, and definitely learned no lessons from it. But I wondered, because we knew this kid. He graduated, went in the Marines, and before Christmas, he was dead. Right after basic training. So, any questions? Any comments? No hurtful ones, please. Yeah.
Yeah, I was doing my last lecture yesterday before I met you at night. Country Joe doing Feel Like I'm Fixing It.
Oh, yeah.
And I Woodstock. And I asked how many had heard of Country Joe. It's a pretty hip class. They'd taken my intro course, but this was the mid-60s rock.
Right.
Out of 30, I think only two had ever heard of
him. Oh, okay.
I said, you have to know the song.
And did they know it?
1, 2, 3, where do we fight the border? Probably two.
Two.
I said, well, that's why you come to college.
That's there. I'm going to use that line, too. Yeah. Now that, I mean, you guys probably haven't heard of Country Joe before, have you? In fact, there's a line in a great anti-war movie that maybe you've seen on TV called In Country with Bruce Willis, and which is like the best role I've ever seen him in, as kind of the crazed Vietnam veteran. And there's a scene where the gist of the story, it's a great novel too, by the way, by Bobby Ann Mason. And the gist of it is that this girl, her father was killed in Vietnam. her mother was pregnant with her, but she hadn't been born yet. So there's a scene, and we show it in the Vietnam class, and eventually they do know who Country Joe is and stuff. And there's a scene in it where she's going through her father's old records and with her girlfriend, and her girlfriend goes, "Who is Country Joe and the Fish? What kind of a group was that?" You know, and so and then my students all chuckle because they, well, actually Country Joe had been to class, so they thought that was kind of funny that was in there. But there's a lot of that kind of history, and there's a lot of things that, yeah, you do pick up and can pick up from classes. And even Woodstock, when you talk about Woodstock to young people, a lot of them remember the one where they set it on fire or something. Oh, yeah, they burned it down. No, not that one. You know, not that one, but the one, you know, where 500,000 people, the only incident was a guy fell asleep under a tractor and got rolled over, you know, but that's not bad for 500,000 people. Right? I mean, bad for him. Any other comments or questions? Well, I appreciate you taking some time. I know this is not even a school day. It's the end of the semester. Exams are happening. I'm a professor, too. I've got a pile of papers. I started grading them in the carriage house today. And I've got to get them back by Monday. Monday's our last day. If anyone's interested, my stuff is inexpensive. CDs, books are $5. And, you know, the book with the CD is $10. So. I thank you for listening, and thank you guys for having me. Well, thanks for coming out after your wild party last night.
Thank you. And again, I definitely especially want to thank the American Social Learning Community, and I believe I also have Doug and Scott as well. And it was really great for Heather to consider. I got an email from Heather asking if Rooftop could, you know, host them out on a Friday. I'm like, yeah, that sounds great. So really thank you all for coming. And if you're interested in joining up Rooftop, you can see me after this. Thanks so much.
Very nice. Thank you. Thanks. Hi, Kevin. Hey, thank you, dear.
Good to see you too.
Yes, hopefully next year we go to Detroit.
Well, you know what? That's what we gotta plan, is because this is what's come up since last night. Is, you know, because I've tried to, you know, do the international aspect of my learning community. And we're going to England, you know, in March, but only one kid from that, just other college. Yeah, and even one's a student I had 50 years ago.
Okay.
I'm not
50.
Oh, I'm never talking
about it. But so that's the time.
Give me an F. Then I start going, what am I doing after?
Why not Buffalo? We can throw this up. All right, maybe. And so as we go through this, maybe we can, you know, talk to Chuck and the others, and if we came here, he could talk about, because we do Motown music, so we could talk about Buffalo music, and if we can work that out. And, you know, and then they can spend a little time, then they can see the history and the similarities between the Oh, is that what it is?
But I love them.
I was so happy when you told me about that, and then I found it, and they had it in the bookstore. So.
I love it.
I got another one, so I'm thinking anyway, instead of going over scenes, why not just go over those walls? And then they can go. So that may be, you guys know, are you going to do the Sojourners thing with Mo?
No, I would love one.
Well, if you bring the group that's here now,
I'm going to just start.
Because, you know, the Liverpool thing was a great idea, but they're into the Beatles and stuff we're doing, but they're not going. I have the study abroad thing, and they're not going. So, like, I tried Germany or